If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love and light of the One Divine Presence. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. This evening our seminar topic is how to keep free of karmic snares and potholes. Oh, I have so much fun with these shows. I hope you enjoy them as much as I do. So let's start with a little attunement here. And take a deep breath. And call yourself forward, that part of you that is birthless, deathless, eternal, that swims like a divine dolphin in the sea, golden, of love and mercy, that resides back of your forehead, in the center of your skull. There is a bliss resonant there, waiting for you to dive in and quit the silly dreamings of doings and becomings and move into the being that's always been. So take another deep breath and challenge yourself to present. To call yourself forward. Insist. Have an imperative that will not be denied. And will that the light that you are present. Be aware of who is listening right now. That is you. Open your eyes and look around your room. Who is seeing? It is you. Do you know that you see only by the light of the divinity that you are? That it is the spirit, the Atma, the eternal one that you are, that is listening. That is seeing, that is observing. So what is the mess that comes from all of that, that we get all snagged and snared in the potholes? It's the mind. It's that monkey mind. Because we imagine things down here are important, and they're not. You've never even been here in any real sense. It's the mind that has woven this story of this karma drama. It's all a big mashugana mess. It's all a big nonsense. The problem is we've bought into it as real. Therefore, we have to unbuy into it as unreal. To transcend it, we have to come to our senses. So if you can listen, and just listen, without running into the mind and trying to understand and trying to intellectualize in theory, try to nail it down somehow so that you can revisit it or regurgitate it, Forget it. Just listen. And when you see, just see. Don't allow the mind to come in and to begin to lay an interpretation, a judgment, an energy, an imperative to understand on what you're seeing. Be virginal, be childlike, be innocent, and simply see. And simply listen. God is the light in which you see. God is the awareness with which you listen. God, Atma, Divine Spirit, is that which knows and always knows everything. Always. And we visit this part of us from time to time. And we have that knowing sporadically. But the knack is to be able to move in, call ourselves forward into that wholeness, and live from that always. In fact, you know, we don't do spiritual practices to realize God, to realize the Atma. We actually do them to remove the mental blocks that we have fabricated and projected outward and associated with and interpreted and all of that. We simply move these aside. And then that which sees can see. That which hears can simply listen. And that which is the being that is eternal can simply be. And what is that being when it's present? Oh, it is the happy one. It is the one that is forever pleased and pleasing. It is that one that is such an upwelling of divine nectar that it feeds and sustains its own beingness without any outer extension of need. It is an all-sufficiency place within your own innermost being that is so delicious and so delightful and so ecstatically fulfilling that you fall in love with your own divine, delicious essence. And you revel in it. That is what your mind, your seeking mind, is trying to hide from you. This monkey of an ego mind. Let me show you again, I think I've shown it to you before, a very simple meditation which I suggest you use any time you find yourself agitated and starting to make a big deal out of nothing, which would be any time that you're making a big deal, it's going to be out of nothing. It's going to be some form of manic mood making that your mind is wanting you to be mindful of. Don't be mindful. Be mindless. Less mind. More Atma. More listener. More seer. More light. God is the light in which you see. God is the listener. God is the observer. God is who you are. So sit up straight if you'd like to do this meditation. And just put your arms or your hands in an upturned position. Feet flat on the floor. Take a deep breath. Consciously allow your shoulders to relax. You might want to raise them up and let them drop. And then, very gently, place your attention with your breath. Don't try to control it. Allow it to rise spontaneously. And exhale spontaneously. Let the breath come to you. Don't go grabbing. And let it be released naturally, without forcing. Just watch your breath. You may notice initially that it speeds up, or it may slow down. Allow it to find its own rhythm. That is God, you know, that's breathing you. Your breath is God breathing you. So as you inhale, realize that your breath is automatically going so. And when you exhale, your breath is automatically making the sound hum. So, hum. That's the sound your breath makes. So every time you breathe, you're actually saying God's name. Sa-a-hum. I am. There's a way that you can use it to clear your energies very simply. So, or Sa, represents God. Sa means sacred or divine. So when you breathe in, so, breathe in God. Hum. Exhale, ego. So, breathe in God. Hum. Exhale, ego. And the ego would be anything that is unloving, unkind, hurtful, negative, stressful, whatever that which is not joy. That would be what you exhale. So, inhale, God. Hum. Exhale. Ego. So, inhale, God. Hum. Exhale, ego. And you'll notice that as you practice this, you'll begin to get quieter and quieter until your breath becomes so soft that if you had powder underneath your nose, it wouldn't even be disturbed. And a good way to think of the second syllable, hum, is to think of the ego as the ham that wants to hog the spotlight on the stage of your life. The ego is a big ham that wants to hog the show, wants to shine in the center of that spotlight. So breathe that sucker out. Breathe it out. And anything that goes along, which would be unloving, unhappy, worrisome, whatever, conflict, anger, anything, release it in that second, that exhalation. So again, so breathe in God. Hum. Exhale. Ego. And that's your preliminary before you do any other form of meditation. those of you that are sound current initiates that have a initiatory tone can also do that as a preliminary. And I find it helps you to stay alert and awake if you want to be more conscious. But after about 5 minutes, and that's about a good time to do this, personally, I find that I have completely transcended body consciousness, and my body is completely at that point numb. I have no body consciousness, and I have transcended above the mind. So I'm in a deep, deep state of quietude and serenity. So that's there for you. If you can practice that, instead of getting into worry and agitation patterns, you will find that the clarity of your mind will be there for you in finding solutions. And there's always a spiritual solution that is the one that you're to find for everything that you think is the problem in the outer world. The only problem is that you forget who you are. There really is no other problem. And there really is no other purpose to your being here but to remember who you are. And you get as many chances as you need to do that. But this is a very, very good time in lifetime to begin to wind up this carnival and awaken to who you truly are so that you don't keep getting snared in the mind games, which we call karma, and the potholes, which are those things that you fall into and then wonder why you're in the pit. So we imagine things as important down here that are not. And we're never, ever upset for the reasons we think. We're actually upset because we're seeing something that's not there that we're making a big deal and a big doing out of. And that doesn't need to be done. Don't make a big doing out of things. Make a big being out of the self. Not a big doing out of the ego. So how to keep free of karmic snares and potholes? I remember one of the Sikh masters, I think it was Kirpal Singh, gave an analogy that I've always remembered. He said the soul is like a silken scarf, one of those silken Tibetan kataks, that gets caught on the brambles and thorn bushes of life. What is it that snares us? It's whatever delays our onward progression. It holds us back into a negative pattern, a negative trigger, a negative revisiting of something from the past. Almost always, the snare is pulling you from something in your past that you haven't dealt with. And it has to be dealt with, otherwise it's just going to keep you hung up on that bramble bush. What would be a pothole? Well, those are the pits that we dig for ourselves with our mouth, primarily. You dig a hole and fall into it every time you allow your mouth to run your mind out in negative ways against yourself or anyone else. And you fall when you do that. Your speech is given for one purpose, and that is to be an oracle of God. You are to speak the oracles, the divine words of God. You are to give life and inspiration through your words. Any other use of your voice produces a karmic pothole. So watch your words. Deal with things as they come up. what you don't deal with will snare you. What do I mean when I say deal with it? Well, generally when people are upset, they try to distract so they won't feel the upset. They light a cigarette, or they pour themselves an alcoholic drink, or they go out on the town, or they turn on the music full blast, or they turn on the television, or they go to some form of entertainment, because they're trying to get rid of the feeling of upset. I think everyone listening to my voice can relate to this, because we've all done this in our own form. Now, the spiritualized version of that is that you try to rationalize your situation in a spiritual way, but you still don't deal with it. You'll intellectualize by saying, oh, well, it's all an illusion. It doesn't matter. Or that's their karma. That's not my karma. I don't have anything to do with that. Hey, if it's an issue that upsets you and agitates your mind, it's yours to handle. It's an inside job. When you're not at peace, don't lie to yourself. Realize you're not at peace. And it's your dharma, your duty, to find out why. What triggered you that caused you to lose sight of the divine bliss that is your nature? What is it? Be a sleuth and track it down. And you'll notice whenever you step out of alignment with your true self, you're going to experience some form of disquietude on some level. You know, we are hardwired to be divine incarnations. And when we vary from that divine wiring, that divine, what would you call it, mandate, that divine sankalpa that God implanted in us as his incarnations, you will notice something goes off as a warning system. It could be depression, unhappiness, anger, frustration, finding fault, getting critical, bitterness, denial, you know, the whole dreary kit and caboodle. So what I'm saying here is whenever you are not in the bliss of God, you're in the illusion of the ego. You're snared, or you've tripped into the pothole. You've made a big doing out of a nothing. You've made an interpretation that is baloney. You're allowing your mind to be mindful of mashugana things, crazy things. Because the mind is a mad monkey. It can't stay still for a second. It jumps from branch to branch to branch to branch. So the only thing you can do with a monkey mind is tame it through mantra, get it attached to the name of God, mantra, and then when it's busy chanting mantra, you, as divine awareness, can transcend it to a higher level. That's the method in the madness. Master the mind with mantra. I speak from direct experience. I did that. I had a mad monkey mind. And I chanted mantra instead of thinking. Every time the monkey would try to jump around, I would fascinate the monkey with the names of God, and I would chant them again and again and again. Till that became a habit pattern that replaced the worrisome, agitated mind and its leaping about. And my mind liked it so much that it would chant all the time. Even in the middle of the night, I'd wake up and the mantra's going on. So that's how you tame the monkey mind. It's like the cobra, you know. Do you ever see in India they have the cobra snake charmers? The cobra doesn't actually hear. We think it hears the flute. But actually, it resonates to the vibrations. It's tuning into the vibrations. And it becomes so fascinated with the vibrations that it doesn't snap and bite you. So the mind won't snap and bite you either. if you fascinated with the name and the form of God, but you must master the mind. You must take the mind, say Baba says, like a little boy, you take the mind by the hand, and you lead it to where you want it to sit, and then you give it something to play with. What it plays with is the name and the form of God. So give it something that it really, really likes. You know, pick a name and a form of God that you really have an attraction towards. Sai Baba said it doesn't matter because God is the sweetness of the sugar that sweetens all those little cookies that you press into different shapes. One is shaped like Buddha, one is shaped like Jesus, one is shaped like Krishna, one is shaped like the mystical traveler. Doesn't matter. What matters is that you have a shape, a form, that the mind can focus on. Because only when the mind is positioned and playing with a name and a form will it leave you alone long enough that you, as a soul, can transcend beyond it. This is where you must make a clear distinction between your mind that's running a constant commentary on everyone and everything and their dog, and that part of you that is the witness. Who's listening to me right now? That one. Who's seeing right now? That one. Not the one that's thinking, evaluating, critiquing, judging, passing commentary and opinion. Not that one. That's the mind. That's not who you are. That is a conditioned stream of energy that runs through your system that you allow to get yourself snagged on, like that silken katak, that silken skirt. So that's where you position that mind. Get it attached to that soul. And at some point that so hum merges into om. And it's a natural thing. It happens very naturally. Begin to observe your breath when you are just going about. Notice how much faster you breathe when you are mentally agitated or emotionally distraught. And actually what you're doing is burning yourself out and shortening your lifespan. It is said in the Vedic teachings that all life forms have a certain number of breaths. And when that number of breaths has been breathed, that life expires, whether it's a fly that lives 30 days or a person that generally lives 80, whatever that is. But the fact that our life is shorter now in the Kali Yuga is directly in proportion to the mental agitation and the preponderance of the mind and the ego in the Kali Yuga, which is the period of the cycle when man is in the deepest dredges of darkness and ignorance of the divine self. It's also the time when you can awaken more easily to the divine, simply because the name and the form of God is the pathway beyond the darkness. That name and that form becomes the light in which you walk, in which you live, in which you see, in which you completely stay in that presence we spoke of last week, that secret place of the Most High. That's how you keep in the presence, because the name and the form, whenever you think of the form, the one that has the name of that form must appear to you. And the minute you say the name of that form, you call that person forward. So whether you visualize the form or you say the name and the form go together. And in that way, you keep company with the beloved. beloved that you have selected to walk with in your day. Now, when you awaken in the morning, a very sweet process that I love to do is to imagine in your mind's eye the feet of the beloved Lord and put each of your hands on those feet and take the blessing of the Master upon your head. Feel his or her hand upon your head, blessing you as you offer your day, and say, "You be the doer of all things through me. I want your thoughts, your words, your actions to inspire everything that is done, said, and thought through this instrument this day. Receive also the merit and the repercussions of my actions, which are really yours. I offer my day to you." And then reach up and take the hand of that person that is your way shower, your master, your Lord, your guide, and walk with that Lord, that beloved, throughout your day. Find ways to visualize that wherever you are, that beloved is there with you, sitting in the car next to you as you drive to work, sitting in your office or in your cubicle right there next to you, sitting with you at meals. In my family, we always set a special place for the Lord at the table. And sometimes the Lord would come knocking on the door, like a hungry person or a neighbor. And we always thought that that was the Lord who'd come to dinner. And, of course, we'd already prepared a place for that person. So, and in India, it's very sweet, too. You'll notice that before people eat, they'll take a small portion of food and they'll put it outside the leaf, well, if you're eating on a leaf, or outside the plate if you're eating on a plate, and they'll pour a little bit of the beverage there, and that's for God. It's just a sweet way to bring the presence of God into every action that you do. Begin when you sit alone to imagine that in the space all around you are those loved ones that you keep company with in your spiritual lineage. My house is so full of the masters, the angels, the benefactors, my teachers, those that I love with all my heart, Sai Baba and Jesus and John Roger and Master Moria, Master Kutumi and Joel Cole and all of the different masters. I sit in my house, Ashtar, and when I go down in the morning from upstairs, I always say, "Good morning, everyone. God bless you." And when I go upstairs in the evening, I always say, "Good evening, everyone. God bless you." And I never forget to do that because I'm so aware of their presence with me. I live in that awareness all the time. And thus, I'm always in the company of the beloved. And I'm always happy. And I always, I never feel alone or lonely. And these are simple, simple little habits of a lifestyle of a mystic. A mystic is a person that loves God and seeks the company of the divine, wherever he or she is. And this is the way to live in the world, but to live at the same time in the kingdom of heaven. So to be in the kingdom of heaven is an inner state of consciousness. It's not an outer kingdom somewhere where you worship somebody on a throne somewhere outside of yourself. It's where you feel the presence of the Raja Raj, the great King of Kings, right within your own innermost being. And you treat yourself as royalty. you treat that presence that is listening right now, that is seeing, that presence, as the King of Kings. Because who you are as a divine spirit and the Atma, or God, and life itself are identical. There's no difference. God, Guru, and the Self are one and the same. And that's the great mystery that you realize as you go deeper into the spiritual life. Because to know God, you don't look outside. You look in the innermost depths of your own core essence. Because in finding yourself at your lowest, you will discover God at its greatest. Why is that? Because underneath all that pile, you're going to find a pony. Keep digging. So the metaphor here is you dive into the things that seem to be not the bliss. Because underneath all that mind stuff, which is not the bliss resides ever effulgent and ever full. So you don't have to seek it. You can't seek God, because the minute you seek it, you've externalized it, which is a delusion, a delusional state of the mind. You simply uncover the blocks to the awareness. And the blocks are always making a big doing out of a big nothing. Always. The blocks are making a big doing out of a big nothing. There's nothing to be done here except to open your eyes to the bliss and the beauty of the divine presence in which you live and move and have your being. The world, the entire cosmos, your body, your sense of identity, all of the things that you have accorded outer forms to exist within your own beingness, within the Atma. All of these things reside. All of these things. And it is only the ego mind that pushes them outside into outer forms and locks them into categories of differentiation. That's what the ego does. It divides and separates and externalizes to keep you ensnared in the illusion, so it can hog the spotlight of your life like the big ham that it is. So, hum it away. So, God, hum, exhale that mini, mini me, and be the great I am. So life is a game. Play it. My Bob is always telling us that. Life is a game. Play it. And yes, life is a game. And learning that it is a game and how to play it and win is an acquired skill. I've given you a few very powerful keys. Number one, don't make a big doing out of nothing. Nothing down here is important. It's all smoking mirrors, magic beans, window dressings, and silly things that go bump and scrape in the dark. But none of it is real. It is like a magician's conjuration that the mind fabricates to fascinate you and draw you away from the bliss. That's what the ego does. It tries to distract you from the bliss so that you won't revel in the love and the ecstasy that you are. If you ever get a whiff of your essence, you're going to just sit in that gorgeous essence of your own being and fall in love with it. You're going to want to dwell in it. You're going to want to roll around in it. You know, like a cat in a container of catnip. You just want to roll all over that. That's you. That's that sweetness. That's that ananda, that bliss, that divine lusciousness that is the self that you are. So don't let the ham hog the spotlight. Be aware that you are bliss, and anything that is not bliss is not worthy of your attention. So don't let it snag you and be a snare or a pothole. So how to keep free? What is spiritual liberation? Well, it's freedom. That's what we are to win in this game of life, is freedom. Freedom of soul. Spiritual liberation. What does that mean? It means to be fully alive. To live and love and enjoy life. Every minute of it. To enjoy everything. Enjoy your relationships. Enjoy your sexuality. Enjoy your food. Enjoy the beauty of nature. Enjoy your sports. Enjoy your pets. Enjoy your family. Enjoy it all. But don't buy into the doing and don't make a big deal out of it. Just enjoy it. You know, like when you get on a train and you're going through beautiful landscape, beautiful territory, you don't have to do anything with that. You're just looking at it, right? Live your whole life like that. Live your whole life like a passenger on a train. Just look at the scenery, and enjoy it. But no, don't make a big doing out of that. Just be with it. That's how you live free. And when you do what you do, do it with all your heart, your mind, your soul, with God, to God, as God. So that everything that you do is in God and with God and as God. Then you don't have any karma. You're living free. You're a Jiva Mukta. You're a liberated soul. Why aren't people liberated? They forget. Why do they forget? Because they don't prioritize remembering. If you prioritize, and you will if you want this, you will prioritize it if you want it enough, you will create whatever you need to do to clear the logjam of your mental snares and potholes. You're going to clear those out, however you need to do that, if you want to be liberated. I mean, you're already liberated. You're just looking at the mind that has created all of this self-imposed series of limitations as if they had the power to affect God. So, karma simply means action, and all action produces an effect. And the person who identifies with that action is the one that has to reap the results. Bottom line, quit taking credit for your doing. Quit taking credit for your doing. If you allow your ego, this big ham that wants to hog the spotlight, if you allow your ego to take credit for your thoughts, words, deeds, actions, creative whatevers, you get the karma. Get that and get it clearly. If you believe you're the doer, you must reap the results of that doing. So all actions done out of the ego state, or you believe you are the doer, create karma. That's the only thing you need to remember. Ego-sponsored acts produce a karmic return, whether they're negative or positive. For example, if you do good and meritorious deeds, but believe you are the meritorious do-gooder, then you will receive your reward in one of the many heavenly states. However, you're not free. So, when you are free, you don't identify yourself with being anything. You are quite content to be no thing in order to be everything. Very, very important. So, good karma does advance your position, or at least so you believe, in your next birth, and gives you the favorable circumstances that you have right now listening to this show to progress spiritually. You have to have good karma to even be aware of God, much less to seek God, and even more so to love God. All of that is good karma. So if you're on a spiritual path, if you have a master, a teacher, if you have connections with highly evolved souls, those are all the results of good karma, of meritorious deeds. So don't get hung up on the good things that you're doing either as a so-called spiritual person. As my teacher said, don't buy into your press. Don't try to be someone. Try to dissolve in that sense of identifying yourself with anything less than God. And then don't go around spouting that you're God. I mean, that's another one of those doings that's totally unnecessary. So Jesus said that if your eye be single, your whole body would be filled with light. What this means is that when you are focused in the soul center, behind your third eye, you will begin to see light, which is your connection of your higher mind with your soul, your buddhi, or the higher mind with the soul, produces what you experience as inner light. Sometimes you'll see that in different colors. Sometimes it'll just be like a golden sun. Doesn't matter, however it appears to you. But that is the first indication that the mind itself is tapping into that higher divine self that you are. And then, eventually, as you meditate, your whole body becomes filled with light. And that's when the soul, the consciousness of the higher divine self, completely weds itself with your mind and your physical body, and you become literally an embodiment of light. That's when you're really a light bearer. That's what that means, is to be the light. And you are the light. And so it's allowing that light to fully inhabit you that enables you to be in that state that Jesus was referring to. That's also called soul transcendence. And that means that you're able to live from that higher awareness so that you can keep free of the karmic snares and potholes. When you're in soul transcendence, you're in the objective observer. You're in that part that Eckhart Tolle calls the presence, or the now, or the witness self. There's many terms for it. But it's where you're simply present, seeing without letting your mind get entrained in critiquing or judging or doing anything with what you're seeing. You're just seeing, you're just observing, or listening. You're simply listening. You're not trying to understand. You're not trying to remember what I'm saying. You're not frantically trying to write it down. You're simply the one that is listening. And that is the soul. That is who you are. That is the one, the divine one, that is present behind the mind. That is present when you're awake, when you're asleep, in birth, in the dream that you call death, in the state before birth, in the state after death. That is the part of you that is the eternal one, birthless, deathless, immortal, and pure, forever pure, and the one that revels in its own beingness. That is its all sufficiency, its all fullness and wholeness, its own shalom, its own salvation. Both of those terms, shalom and salvation, mean the return to your wholeness and your holiness, your fullness. The soul transcendence is also known by other terms and definitions like Christ consciousness, self-realization, Atmic awareness, the mind that was in Christ Jesus, soul infusion, and so forth. But it's basically living as the light that you are. So, the whole game of life is to identify with your divinity rather than with your body, mind, and personality. It's to marry all of those levels of yourself so that you have a congruency between what you think in your mind, what you allow that mind to direct your body to do, and the persona that you present as you go forth in your interactions in this mindset that you call the world. So when you know and realize that it is only that divine spirit, the Christ, the Lord, the indweller that is doing all things through you, you are free of the karmic effects. And then you are living in grace rather than under the law of karma. Because when you're under the law of karma, which is absolutely impartial, impersonal, and just, it's an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and it has no humor whatsoever. So, live in grace. Live in grace. Don't live under the law of karma. Remember who you are and watch what you do. So the knack is to remember to simply be the observer of our actions and not to identify with being the doer. So practice observing yourself acting. Now that's the knack to acquire. Practice watching yourself as if from a distance. Get above yourself. That's what soul transcendence means, is to rise above the mind and the emotions and the body and look from a higher position. Some of the major things that snare us and our major potholes that land us in Karmaville are the following. Number one, judgment. Every judgment piles a heaping load of karma upon your plate. Along with judgment are blaming, criticizing, fault-finding, gossiping, slandering, speaking ill of another. All of these are aspects of judging. Don't go there. The minute you judge, the soul backs off, and you're out on your ego, and you're creating karma. Number two, causing harm. And this would be by your thoughts, words, deeds, or even causing another to go astray due to your behavior, example, or influence. Be careful that you don't mislead and lead others to their downfall. This is a really sticky slope, and you really need to pay attention to what you're dishing out. Karma is set into play regardless if you were causing harm intentionally or unconsciously. In fact, all ego-generated action is unconscious, done by someone who is asleep or completely out of touch with their divine self. Number three, this is another big one, getting involved in the business of another. Mind your own business. Every time we're getting mind snagged into someone else's karma drama to where you get an attitude, an opinion, an upset, an anger, overly sympathetic, overly identifying, you're taking on their karma. Or where you are so concerned and invested in the outcome that you get really wrought up and entangled in it. So karma doesn't care if it's the person that did it or the person who is feeling sorry and getting involved with the person who did it. It'll stick all over you if you have an attitude, a judgment, or a position regarding what's happening to another soul. That is their creation that they need to deal with. You can, of course, help people, and you can empathize by listening and doing what you can to be of assistance, but don't get attached into their process. That's for them to handle. Number five is guilt. And the kissing cousins of guilt, which would be remorse, regret, hanging on to things from the past, revisiting old mistakes, misdeeds, etc., and so on. Confess it. Ask to be forgiven. Allow it to be dissolved back into the nothingness from which it came. You never have been here. You never did any of the stuff you thought you did. You simply forgot who you were and had a bad dream. Forget it. But grace it and see it dissolve in that divine love of God. You know, you have to ask yourself whenever you feel guilty, who did what? Who dreamt this dream? Who fell into this pothole? You know, laugh at yourself. It's like, guilt is like having a dream and then waking up in the morning and beating yourself over the head for it. You never do that over a dream, so why do you do that over the dream in the day, which is the same as the dream that you have at night? They're both dreams. Get over it. Move on. But deal with the feeling. You know, you have to offer that into divine grace in some form, through prayer or however you deal with it, so that it doesn't stick inside you and snag you on that bramble bush of karma. Number six, resentment. That's where you keep resending a negative emotion over and over and over again. So that is something that must be cleared within your own levels to where you have a sense of clarity and balance. And there's many, many techniques for these things. So you will find those that work for you. Seven would be basically hatred, which would be any unloving thought, word, or deed toward yourself or anyone or anything. So if it's not loving on someone, it's hating on them in some form. And that's probably the antithesis of really what you want to keep company with and promote. Somebody asked Sai Baba about the evil going on in the world. And Sai Baba said that the world and the evil in the world is none of our business. It is God's business. And our business is to avoid doing any evil ourselves and to uproot any evil tendencies in our nature, for only in that way will we be a positive force for good in the world. So remember that our only real way we can help the world is to awaken to the love that we are and to live that unabashedly, full on, and let that replace the ham that's trying to hog the spotlight, that ego. Time to thank him for whatever it was that he came to show you, and to bid him adieu. He has served his purpose, and so we let him go his way, which should be dissolved in the love of God. So the world we see exists only in our mind. So it pays to make the world you live in as loving and as beautiful as you possibly can, by living it consciously in the presence of God and reveling in that divine presence that lives in you and expresses through you. So bottom line, if you can't say something nice and positive, zip it. If it's a negative thought, nip it. And stop immediately and self-correct by redirecting your mind to the remembrance that you remain as God created you, in original innocence, holiness, and peace. That's going to mean you're going to speak a lot less and with much greater deliberation and foresight when you do. So let's go out chanting. Let's see, let's do Anahiu. That's the good one to do for this seminar. Deep breath. Anahiu. God is who you are, love is your nature, and peace is your natural way of being. God bless you, and the peace of God is with you, always. God willing, I'll be with you this time next week. Better night.